Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, David Janes, intern Emily here with you. Now, some of you may be tuning in and wondering, where are Chase and Big Joe? Well, Chase and Big Joe, they are live in Atlanta for SEC Media Days, which is underway. They will be on from noon to 3 all week. So we will be here with you from 9 to noon all week. Derek Mason out for the first few days on vacation. A big week, Willie Donick, for Derek Mason. He will be inducted into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame this weekend. Looking forward to the festivities. A well-deserved honor for our dear friend, Derek Mason. But Willie, how are you? How was your weekend?
It was good. We are always signaled that the college football season is coming soon when it's time for SEC Media Days. I liked when they had them a little closer to the start of the season because now, and I understand why they do it, because it is the most downtime in the calendar, on the sports calendar, especially around the All-Star break for Major League Baseball. It gives a lot of fodder for ESPN, but you do this, and then you have what seems like forever until you have anything to report on in college football. So it creates another gap, which I don't like. I like when you went right from this closer to the time the practice started, but that's just me. But it'll be fun. Chase and Big Joe got it locked down, and the Commodores will be in the headlines today. They've got their turn at the podium.
The Vanderbilt contingent will address reporters today. We will get heavy into the Commodores this hour. Also, we are expected to be joined by Vanderbilt defensive back Martel Hite live from Atlanta at the end of the show. So looking forward to having that conversation. Diego Pavia at SEC Media Days, wondering, Willie, if Pavia will say anything else will generate headlines. I'm wondering.
I'm not wondering. I'm just waiting for it. Coach Willie is on guard.
Coach Willie is on guard. Speaking of Martel Hite, this isn't news if you follow Vanderbilt football on a regular basis, but Pete Thamel of ESPN tweeted this out. Vanderbilt all-SEC returner / starting cornerback Martel Hite will play wide receiver for the Commodores this fall. Coach Clark Lee told ESPN he took snaps there this spring, and Lee is going to expand on Hite's expanded role today at SEC Media Days. Hite will play in all three phases for the Commodores as he started 13 games at corner last year, scored a pair of touchdowns, one interception, and one return, and averaged 14.7 yards on 18 punt returns last year. So we are expected to be joined by Martel Hite roughly around 11:40, 11:45, so we'll end the show with that interview. Looking forward to that conversation.
We certainly hope we can stay on time because sometimes the clock gets a little bit skewed when you go through Radio Row. So I'm hoping that, especially in the last segment of our show, I think it might be Chase and Joe that have him. It's possible. But I hope we get to talk to Martel.
We would be remiss if we did not mention that the SEC now has an official chicken sponsorship. Wayne Sanderson Farms.
Oh, I heard the breaking news with Robbie and Joe on that.
The official chicken of the Southeastern Conference. Now, when the SEC Media Days were here a couple of years ago, and it's hard to believe that it's already been 2 years since the SEC Media Days came to Nashville downtown at the Grand Hyatt Hotel. I remember I was helping Teresa Walker of the Associated Press, and during a slow period, I took the escalator up to the nice breakfast / brunch spread that the SEC laid out for all of us, and I vividly remember Johnsonville, official sausage of the SEC. I was like, this is big time. They have an official sausage. Now they have an official chicken. So congratulations to the SEC on your official chicken sponsorship.
What do you think is not claimed that we could take, Adam? I feel like there's something that we could find. David, I think I'm going to put you on that. We need to be the official something of the SEC. It could be very obscure, but we are going to take ownership of it. And we're not going to pay anything. That's the other thing. We want
that's
the title
the
without
part.
Paying
that's
anything.
That's the big part. We're not paying anything.
We want something that's not going to cost us anything.
Well, at one point, Sonic was the official quick service restaurant of the SEC, which is a fancy way of saying fast food, I suppose. So, yes, we will be the official...
Wait, what's the official what?
The official quick service restaurant of the SEC. Not fast food. The official quick service restaurant.
Can we just...
Everything is sponsored these days.
I know, but the word switch... I thought we were... Haven't we gotten enough of the... Let's not call it what it is.
I suppose.
I mean, we've been doing this for decades now. It doesn't sound right. So if somebody switches what it's called, we're not fast food?
I suppose. I don't know what the line quick of service. Demarcation is between quick service and fast food.
It's the same
food.
Thing.
Now, no? Now does
it
that include...
It's definitely the same thing.
Does it include fast casual? Because that's another section.
That's another one?
Fast casual.
What's an example of a fast casual?
Let's see. What's the difference between fast food and fast casual? Our show is off to a great start today.
I feel like they're the same thing.
Fast casual, I think, gives off the vibe that it's higher quality.
Like Panera?
Like Panera or Chipotle.
Okay.
Versus your usual fast food
garbage.
Restaurants. It's not garbage.
It tastes good.
It does taste
it's
good.
It's good,
not good
garbage.
For you. There's no food
it's
in it.
It's delicious garbage. It's delicious garbage.
I will have an occasional fast service.
Quick
plate?
Service.
Quick
service. Sorry. Fast food, quick service.
Let's make sure we get it right.
Yeah.
Let's get our words right, guys.
Across the streams.
Right, exactly. So if any of you have any idea what we should sponsor for the SEC, let us know on our text line, 615-737-1025.
We're the fast discussion board of the SEC.
We'll workshop
we'll work on it.
We'll work on that. I did think of you this weekend, Willie Donick, because Mr. Met took quite the tumble at the Lumineers concert at Citi Field. So the Lumineers, I'm sure all of you are familiar with the band, the Lumineers. They were performing at Citi Field in Queens, and the stage had some of those catwalks on the field. Mr. Met, of course, made an appearance. Must have missed the corner that he was walking toward and completely fell off the stage. Mr. Met is okay, but I did think of you when I saw Mr. Met take a dive off the stage.
It was a moment of trepidation for all Mets fans. And it was one of those cutouts. You know, there was an escape route in the middle of the stage. It wasn't falling into the crowd, thankfully. Although I feel like there were probably some Met fans ready to catch him. But how Mr. Met was not decapitated on that play, I am very thankful, because that could have been ugly for a lot of the youngsters that saw that clip. Did you ever see the viral clip of... It wasn't Mr. Met, but it was something similar, something with a big head. And he, or she, fell off. It was like a holiday performance, Christmas carols in front of the kids. And the guy fell off the stage and was decapitated. The head came off. That was not what any kid wanted to see during the holiday season.
That was like a few years ago, the Oregon Duck lost its big head and like had to like hide as he was walking towards the tunnel.
It's the one nightmare of any mascot. You cannot lose your head. So Mr. Met, I whoever did his costume, because he was not in the Met uniform. He was kind of in a Lumineer vibe, his costume. I was even wondering if it was the real Mr. Met for a minute. But his head stayed on, even though his head made contact with the stage. Like, he bonked it when he went down. It was a legit fall.
He is okay.
He's okay.
He has since shared on social media that he is okay. So Mr. Met, after taking quite the spill at the Lumineers concert, he's okay. Michael and Madison on our text line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com, with a good rule of thumb about fast food versus fast casual. Fast food feels like something you could eat while you're driving.
Yes.
You can't really eat Chipotle or Panera in the car, so that's fast casual.
That's a good point. It is still fast. I think that fits.
Rex Road says Five Guys. He just texted in and said Five Guys. So Five
that's
Guys.
That's more casual?
I think that's more fast casual.
Yeah. A little higher quality implied?
Yes. Theoretically.
You could eat Five Guys in the car.
It's messy.
It is messy, because Five Guys is,
The one thing I love about Five Guys, no free shouts, but the one thing I love about Five Guys is they fill that little styrofoam cup full of fries, but they actually fill up that whole bag full of fries, and then the grease starts seeping in through the paper bag. So that's how you know it's good, because the grease is all over you. So I suppose that's why you can't eat it in the car. We should note that Nashville SC's 15-match unbeaten streak came to an end over the weekend at the hands of Lionel Messi in a 2-1 loss against Inter Miami. By the way, Messi has now scored multiple goals in 5 consecutive matches, which is an MLS record.
It's unbelievable. I actually watched a lot of that game because it was actually on TV. Unlike, I don't have the Apple Plus or whatever.
Right.
But I happened to catch a lot of that game. It was a great atmosphere. It was really humid. Good chances for Nashville SC. I feel like they're going to be in the mix here.
That was Nashville SC's loss in any competition since April 19th.
That is impressive.
So it had been nearly 3 months since Nashville SC lost, but they did against Lionel Messi and Inter Miami over the weekend. We were also treated, Willie, to an excellent Wimbledon final. Yannick Sinner tops Carlos Alcaraz in a rematch to win Wimbledon. I don't know if I don't know why I was so surprised by this. Sinner is the first Italian player to win Wimbledon.
Yes.
I would have thought that at some point an Italian player would have won Wimbledon, but he is the first Italian player to win Wimbledon. But here's the thing.
And he's the first redheaded Italian in the history of Italy, I think, too.
That might be true.
How many redheaded Italians are there, period, just in Italy?
Can't be that many.
There's one that we know of. I don't think I know of any others off the top of my head. When I think of the Italian soccer team, have you ever seen a redheaded guy on the Italian soccer team?
Never.
In The Godfather, were there any Italian?
Nick Frazier, if you're listening, let us know about the history of redheaded Italians. Let us know.
And Nick will have an answer.
He will have an answer.
If we can get this question to Nick, the answer will come back to
us. He will let us know for sure.
So Sinner and Alcaraz have combined to win the past 7 major tournaments. That is the 4th longest streak in the Open era. Federer and Nadal combined to win 11 consecutive majors. Nadal and Djokovic, 9. Djokovic and Nadal, 8. Sinner and Alcaraz at 7. And one thing, Willie, that I think that tennis needs that type of rivalry. And Sinner and Alcaraz are both in their early 20s, so this could be an outstanding rivalry for hopefully the next at least decade and a half. But tennis absolutely needs these types of rivalries, such as any combination of Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal, or Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras, or Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe. You absolutely need that rivalry to grab the attention of the casual tennis or casual sports fan. And I paid attention to the Wimbledon final. I didn't sit down and watch the whole thing. But I feel that tennis absolutely needs that headline rivalry. And with Nadal and Federer retiring, and Djokovic is in the, you know, you can tell he's winding it down. So you needed somebody else. You needed 2 other players to step up and take that mantle. And Sinner and Alcaraz have certainly done that.
Yeah, and I think for the sport, it would be great if an American male could jump into this mix somewhere. You've got a couple of solid top 10ers, top 15, that maybe have a chance to move up. Is it Fritz is the one, and then Shelton is the other. They both did pretty well at Wimbledon. But yeah, Sinner, I like Sinner and Alcaraz. They both have the swagger. They have charisma. They're fun to watch. The product, I think, in tennis is really good. I think for a while, it kind of lost its – it lost some of its edge because the points were too short for a good period of time. They've done a good job with the technology of balancing the ball, the weight of the ball, so the points go – well, it's really fun right now. I commend tennis for adjusting. It's a good product right now. I think the U.S. Open with these guys coming to New York, I think it sets the stage for another good one. They could well meet again in the final of that one.
Hair Metal Henry on our text line says, there you go. You can be the official sponsor of redheaded Italians of the SEC.
Perfect. I don't think that costs us anything.
No.
I don't think Yannick Sinner even knows about the SEC. He might. Yeah. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Tighten up 0828 on our YouTube chat has 2 suggestions.
Okay.
The official multimedia named radio program of the SEC, since we are DVD, and the official Balding with Style sponsor of the SEC.
Yes. All right. Okay. I'll take it. Can we be the official DVD of the SEC, since nobody puts out DVDs anymore?
I think that works. The official DVD of the
multiple,
SEC.
Multiple sponsorships by the end of the day.
This is the part of the program where I make sure to mention that I'm balding, not bald. I do shave my head, so I guess I am balding with style.
From here, you look like you're bald.
Well, I just...
I know, but you're...
It was a clean shave.
You're still bald.
By the way...
You're coming to terms with it. I understand. I was there at that stage. In fact, I remember Chase McKay vividly several years ago looking at me. He goes, "You just got to let it go. You just got to let it go."
I was spending too much money to have my hair styled. So I can only imagine the amount of money that I've saved over the past several years by shaving my head. By the way, Nick Frazier has an answer. Is it Danielle DeRossi, a.k.a. the Roman Gladiator, a retired brunette-haired soccer player that has a hint of redness in it.
It's a hint at best, I would say, in looking at the picture.
One texter said, "How about that crap show of the 35-second heavyweight UFC fight Saturday, which was here in Nashville?"
Tell me about that.
No good sports are on right now, so I was all hyped up about watching this. What a letdown. So, UFC fight night.
You were there, correct?
I was not there. I was at Friday Night SmackDown
Friday
night, which is a much different thing. That is professional wrestling versus Ultimate Fighting Championship. But the heavyweight fight, I believe, ended in 35 seconds. Derek Lewis won by knockout.
What was the
venue? 35 seconds. Bridgestone Arena.
It was at Bridgestone?
Yes.
Were they both at Bridgestone?
They were.
Wow,
and
okay.
UFC and WWE are owned by the same parent company. It's called TKO.
Okay.
So they do these events where they will have wrestling and UFC. They call it a takeover, I think, and they'll have two events, one event from each company at the same building over the course of a weekend. So WWE was at Bridgestone on Friday and UFC was there on Saturday. Yes, but Derek Lewis, a 35-second TKO in the main event of UFC Fight Night. That's the one thing. Look, if you are a fan of professional fighting, whether it be boxing or UFC, that's you go into that knowing that, hey, the fight that you are so excited to see may only last 35 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, there were other bouts.
It's making the one that I can think of off the top of my head, the Mike Tyson versus Michael Spinks. What was that, 91 seconds?
So I don't remember off the top of my head.
It took Mike Tyson double the time to take down
Nick Frazier,
Michael Spinks.
Nick Frazier says, "That UFC fight was insane, not a letdown. I was there."
35 great seconds.
Derek Lewis now has 16 KOs, sold out crowd, 17,007. Fight night card results in an incredible card.
So when that happens, that's the featured match.
Yes.
Do they have some things on afterwards?
There's an undercard, like in boxing.
Right, but that leads up. I'm saying when you get all riled up for the big one and it's 35 seconds, do they have some denouements or something like that? Or
no,
does Nash come out and say, "Okay, you guys are still here. Let's have some fun," or something? Is there a post-concert?
That's a good question for all of you UFC fans. I don't know. Here is a headline about UFC Fight Night. UFC Nashville results, Derek Lewis demolishes, is it Taliesin Teixeira? I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. In 35 seconds, rips off shorts, moons crowd.
Oh, okay.
That's Derek Lewis, baby.
There he is. Is that something he does after every fight?
Well, he's a very
vulgar.
Yeah, vulgar. And he uses his words very non-carefully.
So what you're saying is that we would not be able to play any audio from Derek Lewis
exactly.
on our program.
He was on the Chase and Big Joe show a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it was a very interesting interview.
The dumb button got a workout in that interview. I do recall that. No, I think that when the main event is over, it's over. So
okay.
35 seconds. Home. Yeah.
Now, you and Connor Newt went to the event on Friday.
We did.
How was that?
Connor was my date to Friday Night SmackDown. It was good.
Did it deliver the way you wanted? Did you see Tony Vitello and Tim Corbin? Weren't they both there?
I did not see them. Fred Durst was there. lead singer of Limp Bizkit, WWE is also starting a program with Jelly Roll. Jelly Roll is going to wrestle at WWE's major summer event known as SummerSlam in the tag team match. On the other side, Logan Paul. So the crowd loved it. The crowd loved themselves some Jelly Roll. So
Jelly Roll and Logan Paul, what a combo.
So were Tim Corbin and Clark Lee at SmackDown, or were they at UFC?
I thought they were at the UFC fight.
Okay. Frazier is telling me that Corbin and Clark Lee were ringside for UFC.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
For UFC, yes. Not for the not for the wrestling.
Two very different two companies under the same umbrella, two very different products.
All right, products. So here's the question.
Yes.
How many of the fans went to both? Or is it a divide?
I would say there's different audience. I would imagine there's quite a bit of overlap. I imagine there's quite a bit of overlap between wrestling fans and UFC fans. Although one is choreographed fighting, the other is professional fighting. But
has there ever been a professional wrestling match that lasted 35 seconds?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Because
sometimes they surprise you with a 35-second feature.
It's known in the business as a squash match. Usually what happens is if the wrestling company is trying to get a certain wrestler over, which is another wrestling term for making them more popular or pushing them up the card, they will show off their ability, their dominance by squashing some nobody and beating them.
Some nobody. But when it's the featured match, like the UFC one.
Yes. Sometimes they
will. Does that ever go that quick? Usually that delivers with the drama that it's supposed to be.
We'll have, for you wrestling fans out there, we'll have Willie research the finger poke of doom during the break. Because that match ended in roughly 30 seconds. The finger poke of doom.
Finger poke of doom.
Yes.
Okay.
We don't have time to go into it, but I will explain during the break. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I would be remiss if I did not mention that 1025 The Game's SEC media coverage is sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Chase and Big Joe will be there all week long. Today is Vanderbilt Day, among other teams. There are other teams speaking today. But for us, it's Vanderbilt Day at SEC Media Days. Where should Vanderbilt rank in the SEC pecking order entering this season after their surprising, to a lot of people, 7-6 overall record last season? Willie and I will discuss that coming up next. We'll also take your thoughts as well at 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Maze, Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, David Janes here with you. Derek Mason out for the first few days, but he'll be back later this week ahead of his induction into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. Now that I have wrestling on the brain, Willie Donick, our show, we're like the Fabulous Freebirds of Nashville Sports Talk Radio. Are you familiar with the Fabulous Freebirds?
No.
Okay.
I know the song Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
The Fabulous Freebirds were a tag team in the 80s. Michael Hayes, Buddy Roberts, Terry Gordy. And when they would win whichever territory's tag team championships, they had this thing called the Freebird Rule, which was any combination of the three could defend the tag team championships. So there's you and me, there's you and Derek, there's me and Derek. It doesn't matter what combination of the three of us. We're going to get it done, just like the Fabulous Freebirds. So
okay,
there we go.
Did the Freebird Rule precede the song by Lynyrd Skynyrd, or was it in honor of the song, perhaps? What year are we talking? We have to do the math on that.
Yes.
A little history lesson.
We will have to do the math on that. But Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, wrapped up, I believe, nearly an hour
long news conference. I made a big mistake. I made a big mistake this morning because, you know, we're going on at 9. And so I'm thinking I want to see what the commissioner has to say as much as I can before I have to leave to come down to the show. And I flipped it on a few minutes late, and I made the huge mistake of going back to the beginning of the speech And I heard absolutely nothing because for the first 10 to 14 minutes, which is really all the time I had to really hear, there was no meat. Like, he was making analogies and thanking people, talking about how great Atlanta is. You know, he spent so much time. Barry Trotz would have been proud, actually, of how long he spent on the opening statement before he really got to anything. So let's try to sift through all of this and see what did we learn, if anything, from Greg Sankey.
So Nicole Auerbach of NBC Sports has a lot of information on her timeline from Greg Sankey's news conference. Here's the first thing that stood out from Nicole Auerbach. Quote, Sankey acknowledges SEC and Big Ten differ on preferred CFP expansion formats. Quote, we have a 12-team playoff with five conference champions that can stay if we can't agree. Sankey continued, I think there's this notion that there has to be some magic moment and something has to happen with expansion and it has to be forced. You're given authority. You want to be responsible using that authority. Nicole Auerbach also said, quote, Greg Sankey referenced Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark's comments last week about doubling down, quote unquote, on 5+11 CFP model. Made some gambling metaphors. Sankey, quote, you always want to have a good set of cards, a good hand to play. I think we have the best hand to play, end quote.
Okay, so I guess what they're talking about is A, whether to have 12 or go to 16, right? And then the real question, and this is where he's talking about the hand to play and the gambling, is he who has the gold makes the rules. The SEC and the Big Ten have a lot of power, and it's very hard for them to look beyond themselves and say what's the best for college football. To me, I probably am in the minority here, and I am first to admit that having played in the SEC, I'm an SEC snob, just like most people listening in our listening area, right? I think the SEC is by far the best conference. D-Mace isn't here to defend his Big Ten. But at the same time, I want to see a true national tournament. Even if there's some weak links that get in above a team from my conference, I think that's okay, especially the bigger the field. But that I think I will be in the minority there, and I think the power conferences will be able to squash the ability to get more automatic bids in. So I don't know how you feel philosophically, Adam, but if Boise State or Louisiana Tech, the Sun Belt champion, the West, the WAC champion, you know, whatever the automatic bids would be, kind of like the NCAA basketball tournament, I don't mind those teams being in. But the SEC and the Big Ten are going to say the more teams that get in, that should give us two more teams to get into the field.
The one thing that I love most about the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and by the way, according to Nicole Auerbach, Greg Sankey on the SEC stance on this, quote, in general, we are supportive of expanding both the men's and women's basketball tournaments. To paraphrase our good friend.
I'm with Rex Rhodes on that one.
To paraphrase our good friend Jeremy K. Gover, keep your damn hands off my NCAA basketball tournament. Doesn't need to be expanded, but that's not what we're talking about. The beauty
of Jeff Goodman just said, it's not a done deal. There's still some, I think there's some people really trying, and maybe they have Joe Rexroad's printed out article that he wrote ready to present to people, trying to block it and keep it at a sensible 68. I don't know if we're going to win that battle, but to me, that is a sacred, sacred number that should not be touched. But that's a separate thing. So you have that and the college football playoff. But you were saying you like the NCAA basketball tournament because you have these matchups, right? And we remember the big upsets.
Correct.
Do you think this is a problem with my philosophy for the football? It's harder to have those upsets,
exactly.
I think, in the football.
And we saw it. We saw it this past season. It was Arizona State and Texas, correct? Was that the game?
That was the great game.
That was a great game. But ultimately, the quote unquote lesser thans in college football, because I can't think of a better term right now, the quote unquote mid majors, to use the basketball term, like, the likelihood of one of those teams knocking off one of the powerhouses is significantly less than you see in college basketball.
Just the nature of the game.
Right. So do you want to load up your college football playoff with teams that you know can compete, or do you like your Arizona States, your Boise States, your, I guess you could throw SMUs in there as well.
And I don't like Arizona State and SMU should not be confused with Valparaiso, right?
Yeah, very true.
Like they're in power conferences. They're just not as well known for being in there. So what do you want college football to be? I feel like if you don't include those teams, then you're moving towards just having a separate league with the top teams, and then the other teams, whoever you deem are not in that group, should play for their own championship on a second level. And I think that would be, I don't know, at first I think that would be really tough to swallow for a Middle Tennessee, a Louisiana Tech. Boise State would be a great debate. Which one are they in? Which one do they want to be in? Would they be the best, you know, the perennial favorite in this second division? Or do they want to be the scrappy underdog that plays with the big boys? That would be maybe a choice. But that's where it's going, right? If you're not gonna, if you're gonna have a 16-team playoff and not include these teams, then why even have these teams in the same category? They should create another category.
Right. The beauty of the men's tournament and why I like the format of the men's tournament is because we do have history of lower seeded teams making it to at least the Elite Eight. We've had examples.
The Final Four.
And the Final Four. I mean,
Loyola.
Loyola Chicago, George Mason, Virginia Commonwealth.
Wichita State, if you count them.
Right. And we've seen major upsets. We've seen 16 seeds beat 1 seeds and 15 seeds beat 2 seeds. But the likelihood of that happening, the football equivalent of that, I don't know if there is a football equivalent of that.
And most of the time, those schools don't get a shot. I think all those schools want is a shot. Even if most of the time you're going to get smoked, the 16 seed usually gets smoked.
Yes.
But that one time they don't, that means everything to that school. So I think if you're really doing it right, you should carve out, if you're going to expand, carve out a spot for those teams. But I don't think it's going to happen.
615-737-1025, your thoughts on what Greg Sankey had to say about the college football playoff. We will get into Vanderbilt coming up next. Where should Vanderbilt rank in the SEC football preseason media poll, which is going to be done this week at SEC Media Days? I'm curious about how much last season influenced people's opinions on the Vanderbilt program. And we will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. This isn't just a concert. It's a cause. Trintix's Rock the Cradle helps give fragile newborns a stronger start and keeps moms close when it matters most. With Tim McGraw live on stage and your support behind every beat, Ascension St. Thomas is turning music into healing. Tickets are on sale now at rockthecradlenashville.org. D-Maze, Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063 The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. Brian Kelly at the podium at SEC Media Days. The sound is off in the studio, so I don't know if he has taken on a Southern accent as he is addressing reporters. But Brian Kelly at the podium. Clark Lee will be at the podium later today. Vanderbilt will address reporters later today. And we are hopeful to be joined by Vanderbilt defensive back Martel Height at the end of the program live from Atlanta, where Chase and Big Joe are representing 102.5 The Game at SEC Media Days. But, Willie, as you know, as part of SEC Media Days, there will be the SEC football preseason media poll. And last season, Vanderbilt, no surprise here, was predicted to finish last by a wide margin. They earned 293 points in the SEC preseason media poll. The next closest team, Mississippi State, had 623 points. So Vanderbilt expected to be in the cellar of the SEC last season. That did not happen. They actually finished 12th in the SEC with a 3-5 conference record, but a 7-6 overall record. A fabulous season for Clark Lee and the Vanderbilt Commodores, certainly relative to expectations. I heard Robbie and Retro talking about this morning, and I looked it up myself. Over at ESPN Bet, the over-under for Vanderbilt football in wins this season is 4.5. And at first, I was a bit surprised by that. A team that won 7 games, only projected to win 4.5 this coming season. But as we know, the SEC, it's the best conference in college football. They'll make sure to tell you that themselves. So I'm going to ask Willie Donick. He can put on his Coach Willie hat if he would like. Where do you think Vanderbilt will ultimately rank in the SEC football preseason media poll? I know it's not the end-all be-all, but it'll give us a taste of what the football-watching world thinks of Vanderbilt after last season. My guess is that they will fall somewhere in the bottom quarter of that ranking, so somewhere between 13th and 16th. I don't think they're going to finish 16th. I would say probably 13th or 14th is where they're projected to finish, but you're closer to the program. Where do you think Vanderbilt ends up on this list? After last season.
Well, the actual rank is pretty irrelevant because it's not like there's a tournament that you go to.
Right.
You know, you're not trying to get a seed unless you're in the playoff. Whether you could be 13th and still be pretty good, as we saw in basketball, right? What, 14 out of the 16 made it?
Vanderbilt football finished 12th in the SEC, still made a bowl game.
Right, and so that's what's going to happen to several teams on that list. There was a great article by Pat Forty today looking at the different ways that teams schedule, especially with the SEC staying at 8 for the foreseeable. If you're going for a playoff spot, you got to make sure you're smart with your 4 non-conference games. And if you're Vanderbilt, you got to be smart with those games. You're not that you're trying to have the toughest schedule, but you want to try to give yourself a chance to get to that 6-7 win mark as a baseline. And I really hope, and this was James Franklin and his philosophy, he would basically say, we're not trying to win the minimum amount of games to get to a bowl game. We want to win a lot of games. But I think for where Clark Lee is right now, if you told me right now they could be 7-6 again, and be able to have a repeat performance in the SEC as it is now with a professional league that only more and more resources are getting poured into every year, I think I would take that. I'm still trying to quantify how special that was last year, because it was so common at this time last year. The question wasn't, hey, is Vanderbilt going to win? You know, could they have a chance to be competitive? It was, are they going to win a game in the SEC? A game. Because they didn't win a game the year before and didn't come close to winning an SEC game the year before. And with Oklahoma and Texas coming into the league and all of the teams figuring out how to use NIL and the transfer portal with the system becoming more set, I didn't know that Vanderbilt was going to be able to do what they did. So all that said, 4.5 to me is accurate in the wins. To me, the over-under is really the thing, as opposed to where they end up ranking 13 through 16, whatever, 12. Because I think this is true. You could be better than you were last year if you're Vanderbilt. And on paper, I think they look better. They've got their quarterback back. They've got their most valuable offensive player, non-quarterback back in Eli Stowers. They've got some key guys coming back on defense. They'll have Clark Lee running the defense a second straight year. There's a lot of things you can point to and say, I think they're going to be better. You could be better and still win 4 games, I think, if you're Vanderbilt.
They have an interesting schedule. The Commodores open at home on August 30th against Charleston Southern. They then traveled to Virginia Tech. The Commodores defeated the Hokies here at the beginning of last season.
In overtime.
But they go to Virginia Tech early this season, I should say.
So we know that will be a very difficult game right there.
They're at South Carolina the following week. Their third game, their first SEC game of the season is at South Carolina. They're home to Georgia State. Georgia State defeated Vanderbilt last season. So they're non-conference games. They host Charleston Southern, Georgia State, and Utah State, and they travel to Virginia Tech. But even looking at their SEC slate, They're at South Carolina. They're at Alabama. And we know the Crimson Tide will be seeking revenge. They host LSU. They host Missouri. They're at Texas. They host Auburn and Kentucky. And they're at Tennessee. And that is a tough schedule on paper. Intimidating road games, I guess you could say. Of course, going to Alabama, going to Texas, going to Tennessee. Even Virginia Tech is a tough environment. So you're right. 4.5 wins, Vanderbilt fans may see that and say the blatant disrespect after the Commodores won 7 games, including the bowl game last season. But 4.5 does feel right. And as you said, Willie, with the SEC the way it is, you can improve your team and still end up with fewer wins.
Sure. And it would be really disappointing to fall back to 4. But you just have no idea. We know that Diego Pavia is going to mean a lot in terms of whether the numbers 4, 5, 6, 7. If he has a great year, I think we know what that might look like. But he also is a guy that is very active in games. He's going to take hits. He's going to be aggressive. That's what makes him a really, really good quarterback. So if he were to get hurt, you know, these are all things that can affect a team. But that being said, last year they won 7 with one of the toughest schedules in the country. I especially when you look back and see how good Texas ended up, how good South Carolina ended up. It's the same schedule this year, just reversed within the league. So it's just as difficult. And I have a hard time looking at it and thinking, what would you rather have from the 8 league games? The split that you had last year or the split that you have this year, where you have Auburn, Kentucky, Missouri at home, along with LSU? Can you squeeze some wins out of your home games? Because I think last year, huge wins at Auburn, at Kentucky, right? Those were big road wins. Can they get a road win in the league this year at Alabama, at Texas, at Tennessee, at South Carolina? If they had one road win out of those 4, it would be a big upset, right? So that right there is daunting. So you've got to get it done at home. The other thing is, they barely beat Virginia Tech, although they were soundly beating Virginia Tech early. They clearly snuck up on Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech had no idea what Diego Pavia was going to bring to the table. They stunned Virginia Tech, and that still was a game where Vanderbilt squandered a lead, had to make a dramatic comeback to get to overtime and then win in overtime. Took everything they had to beat Virginia Tech. That's going to be tougher to win at Virginia Tech. So to me, these are reasons why the over-under is at 4.5 and not something like 5.5. So I think you could make the argument the schedule is tougher this year. So they have to make hay at home, I think, to make it happen this year.
615-737-1025. The over-under for Vanderbilt football, 4.5 wins this coming season. Your thoughts on that, your expectations for the Commodores, who will address reporters today at SEC Media Days. We will take a quick Vanderbilt break. We'll get into the Tennessee Titans coming up next. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us coming up next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.